Little here with the Nick Little Life and Leadership Podcast, joined with my lovely bride, Tarina. How are you doing today?
Hello. I'm doing really well. Had my afternoon coffee.
Yeah.
Makes everything better.
How do you take your coffee?
Mostly black.
Black. But you also do that bulletproof coffee, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. Really love that.
So did you do the cold plunge today?
Of course.
Yeah. Yes. You got me started on that kick in January. I think if you have a podcast, you have to do the cold plunge. I think
that's
pretty standard.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But I thought I was going to hate the cold plunge, and I dread it every day, and I look forward to it every day.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. It's like the best thing I do.
It's a very old method, old research.
Yeah, I know. Everybody thinks this just started.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no, you've been taking cold showers for how long?
At least 5 years.
Yeah, long time.
Yeah.
We're just now doing the plunge. You started that last year.
Yes. But you know me, I kind of can go down that road of whatever you're, healthy thing
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you're pretty weird.
I'm weird.
You are pretty weird.
You can say that. It's okay.
Yeah. We have a lot of essential oils in our house. What is that junk you make me put on my salad?
Balsamic?
No, the heart, the ground up heart.
Oh, hemp hearts.
Hemp hearts. Yes. Yeah.
And pumpkin seeds.
That's great. The hemp hearts are good for something, but it gives you something to do the rest of the day because you're picking them out of your teeth.
Correct.
So that's great.
It's good for you, though.
I'm sure it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I know you have me eat that because you love me, but yes. Sometimes I wish you'd love me less. So.
Oh, so are you prepared for your inner circle group tomorrow?
Yeah, probably not. No, that's a great group. My inner circle. So I go out and do a lot of workshops, lots of workshops
yes.
with contractors, and do a lot of foreman training, teaching these guys and gals how to be better leaders, how to yes. communicate at a higher level, how to perform at their best on a daily basis, how to lead with impact, all of these things. And it doesn't matter. Every time I do a workshop, a contractor or my client will call me and just say, "Hey, Nick, you just came out last week and you did this workshop and my guys liked it. It was great. But there was two guys that couldn't be there. Or we just promoted somebody else or we just hired somebody that's
right.
going to be a leader." And
that
so
happens a lot.
How do we get them up to speed? And it's like, well, I can come back out in 7 months or... I never had a good answer to that question.
Yes.
And so I developed the Foreman's Inner Circle, and the Foreman's Inner Circle is targeted for foremen who are in their first 2 years of leadership experience. Not first 2 years in the trade, but the first 2 years they've been a leader running a crew. Maybe they're getting ready to run a crew, but maybe they've been doing it for 2 years. But it's still a pretty new game to them. And we get together virtually. You don't have to get on an airplane. You don't have to take off work all day. We get together virtually on a Zoom call for 50 minutes a month.
How nice.
It's short. It's sharp. And every time we meet, I go through one best practice, one idea. I don't give them 10 ideas they got to shift through. It's one idea. And I support it. We talk about it. And then they have homework. And then next month we come back. And we talked about what worked, what didn't work, because they have to test drive this idea
right.
as a leader. And these things are all over, you know, for whether it be constructive criticism or how to develop somebody without initiative or how to better communicate, how to set expectations. It's all of these skills that leaders need. And I've got two groups. I've got, there's about 25, 30 guys and gals in each group. And it's great. It's one of the best things I've done. But yeah, I'm meeting with them again tomorrow. We took December off. I'm meeting with them again tomorrow, and taking December off, we're gonna have
some catch up.
It'll be some catch up, and we'll get some refocus. And yes. I'm gonna deliver an idea. We're going through the mindsets right now, how to read people.
Oh, I like that.
That's probably the best thing I teach.
It's good for me.
We did Struggler in November
because
our family's full of strugglers.
Yes,
all of our families are, but. We'll probably go through Doer and Thinker. tomorrow. Maybe just get through one of them. We'll see how the time goes. But it's great. It's great. Neat. What I love about that solution, because I've got several contractors that are adding people right now, is I'll tell a contractor, I don't care when you plug somebody in to the foreman circle, as long as they stay in for 12 rolling months, they're going to be exposed to these best practices.
Yes, and they can be well-rounded.
Yeah, and you can get somebody in and start investing in them right away.
Yes.
So I think that's just it's something that's unique to what I do, and it's great. But yeah, I'm doing that tomorrow, and we got a basketball game tonight we're going to.
Yep.
It's fun to watch our kids play basketball, I get a little excited in the stands sometimes, but I'm getting better, aren't I?
You are, yes.
Couldn't get much worse.
As long as you sit by the superintendent, you're great.
Me and the superintendent have an intimate relationship. Yeah, that's good.
That's great. Well, that's good. Okay, so today you are going to share the San Francisco story and how that plays into how you got to where you are today, why you are the way you are today.
why you are the way. That makes sound like I've got real problems.
No. They'll understand why I said that when the story's over.
Well, and I mean, that story's about failure, right?
Right. Right.
And failure's tough.
None of us like it.
But boy, that's where we learn.
Yes.
If we can survive failure. So yeah, this happened, you know, in that 5-year period where I didn't make any money speaking, this was toward the end of that. Yes. There was a lot of stuff that happened toward the end of that. This was right after Cruz cut.
Which we talked about last time. Podcast too, yes.
Because that was one of the stories I told in this deal at San Francisco.
You did.
But this was before I really started working with the construction industry.
Yes.
So this was right in the middle. But yeah, San Francisco, man, this is tough. So by this time, I'd been involved in NSA, National Speakers Association, for a couple of years, the Oklahoma, Arkansas chapter. And I'd gotten to know a mentor of mine, good friend, one of the best people in my life now, Mark LeBlanc. And there was a gal named Terry. Out of California at that time. I think she's still out there in California, but she became a good friend of mine. And National Speakers Association has two main events, or at least they did back then. I haven't been involved in a while, but back then they had two main events. They had the winter conference, mm-hmm. and then they had the main conference. I'm not saying that right, but Terry called me up and she said, Nick, she was the chair of education for the National Speakers Association Winter Conference.
Yes.
And so you got to imagine, this is a conference where all of the, not all of them, but a lot of the big name professional speakers go to give back,
right.
to educate others, but also to learn.
Yes.
And it is Hall of Fame speakers and CSPs, which is Certified Speaking Professionals. I mean, these are all the industry giants.
Yes.
You know, I always like to say it's the Zig Ziglars and the Brian Tracys.
It is.
And these big-time people that I've looked up to. And Terry said, Nick, you're really good at telling a story. And I can tell a story.
Yes.
And that kind of gave me a name in that little industry. And she had heard me speak at a little conference I spoke at for free in Minneapolis.
Yes.
For my buddy Mark. And she said, Nick, here's what I want you to do. We want you to be the opening keynote for the National Speakers Association Winter Conference in San Francisco. And I thought, well, of course
Such
you do.
A big deal.
Oh, most of us will work 30 years.
Right.
And get never get the opportunity.
Yeah, that's true.
For that spot.
Right.
And of course, I'm thinking, I can't believe it took you so long to discover me, because such a big deal. I was such an idiot. But
no.
But she said, here's what we want to do. She said, Nick, you're phenomenal at telling a story. And what we want to do, she said, this entire 3-day conference is all about becoming a master of your craft.
Yes.
How to sharpen yourself. How to take great and become even better. And she said, that's what we want to do with you. She said, for the next 6 months, I'm going to have you work with some of the top four professional speakers in the country.
Right.
And these great people, big names. And she said, they're going to work with you one-on-one for 6 months. And we're going to take your great 45-minute keynote, three of your best stories, and they're going to mold and shape you into an absolute rock star. And she said, what's going to happen is you're going to show up in San Francisco and you're going to deliver this keynote and you're an unknown. Nobody knows who you are. And it is going to just go crazy. And then we're going to show behind the curtains, look at how we got here. How did we go from where you are to here? And I'm like, fantastic. So I get to work with some of these giants in the industry, and it's just going to make me better. And this sounds phenomenal. And so for the next 6 months, that's what I did. I mean, I recorded myself, and then I had one-on-one coaching calls with these individuals, and they gave me some great ideas, and yes. They gave me opportunities. And boy, if you'd say this a little different, if you would pause longer here and make sure you step to your left. And
on Skype.
It was. That was before Zoom.
Yes.
And I remember I kept hearing stories. I mean, this is where good speakers go to become great.
Yes.
This is where unknown speakers get discovered.
Yes.
I had heard a story of another individual who showed up. He was an unknown. He gave a 30-minute talk at a conference like this. And he was book solid for 10 years.
Yes.
This is, if the Nationals of Speakers Association had a draft day, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of hype, a lot of pressure. And we went, you came.
Oh, yes.
You bought a new dress.
Your parents flew out.
My parents flew out. This is a big deal. And I'd rehearsed, I want to say 500 times.
You write a new book for this too?
No, had Small Business, Big Mistakes. Okay. They said, Nick, after you speak, everyone's going to want to buy your book, so bring your book.
Yes.
So I took, there was probably only, three or 500 people at this conference. It's not the winter huge.
Winter is the smaller.
The winter's small. But I think I took 300 copies of my book with me, and because they said, well, after you speak, we'll put you at a book table, and everybody's going to want your autograph, and everybody's going to sign your book and buy your book. And I'm like, all right, this sounds awesome. And I remember I was nervous, of course, but I was prepared.
You were prepared. Yes,
I was prepared.
So prepared.
What's the quote? Greatness happens when preparedness meets opportunity or something like that. And I mean, that was me. And I'm like, I am not going to fail because I'm unprepared.
Right.
And so I went out there and Terry introduced me and I went on stage and from my perspective, I delivered a flawless talk.
You did. And your coaches were sitting behind you. On stage.
No, not at that point.
Oh.
Not at that point. They joined later. They were in the audience.
That is right.
But I remember as soon as it was over, if I had given that speech 100 times, I don't think I could have done it better. Because it was, my hands were in the right place. I emphasized the right words. My feet were in the right place. My pauses were right. I looked at the audience right. And as soon as I was over, I instantly knew it didn't work. Did you feel that?
I felt that probably halfway through.
Wow.
I'm so sorry.
You've never told me this before. Okay, well, here we are. I'm not going to hit pause.
Here we go.
We're not going to unpack this. But so what did you notice?
Well, you had taught me a little bit about reading audiences. up until this point that you had observed and learned. And we were seated at the front. We had a table real near the stage on one side. And so I could see the audience very well. And halfway through, I knew you were at this midpoint of a story, and you had a strategic pause, and it was supposed to be a laughter, and there was no laughter. And I thought, something's terribly wrong. This is not going the way he wants it to.
Well, that's good to know now. That's been...
See, I hold in a lot of words.
You do.
You're learning more about me every day.
We're going to have to work on that. It's like, Nick, I did not discover you were a loser then. I've always known.
I never said loser. I don't say that.
I think we should ask the audience. I'm pretty sure she said loser.
No. Nope.
But okay. Well, you knew ahead of time. But what I noticed, which hit me hard, was NSA, and those are great people. It's a great organization. And if you're wanting to become a professional speaker, get involved. Wealth of knowledge. But they go a little overboard on the standing ovations. You can pass gas and they'll give you a standing ovation.
It's a workout to attend an event.
Oh, all you do. Well, we were at Mark's event where he got inducted into the Hall of Fame. How many times did we stand up during that deal?
I lost track.
Yeah, I bet it was 75 times. Yes. In 40 minutes. I mean, it was up and down. I thought I was at church with my parents again. Pentecostal church. We just stand up and down.
I was just getting in the lunges.
That's right. And actually, if you've been to a Pentecostal church, you're not getting up. You just stay
up. No, you stay up.
You stay up. But it was... One guy stood up. In fact, there was 500 people in the audience. One guy stood up. I've never seen an NSA audience not give somebody a standing ovation.
Yeah.
And I thought, something's not right.
Right.
Well, and then so the first 45 minutes was me giving my keynote. The last 45 minutes was us breaking down why this was such a huge success.
Yes.
And now we all know it was not a success. So how do you call an audible? And so the four coaches got on stage, and so did somebody else who wasn't invited on stage, thought they had a lot of value to add. So they helped themselves on stage. And for the next 45 minutes, basically told everybody.
Tore you apart.
Yeah, that's probably a nice way of saying it. I heard a lot of, you should have seen how bad he was before we started working with him. I heard that a lot.
It's things you say, but not when the person's present. Or sorry.
We are very good at judging people. We don't do it with them in the room, let alone on stage.
It was very painful.
It was. It was tough. But you know what? I survived, and it was over. And I got off the stage, and I thought, you know what? Lesson learned. But then everywhere I went, every time I was outside the men's restroom, every time I was standing in line at the coffee shop, literally, every time I found myself in the back of another presentation, because this went on for 3 days.
And it's at a full-service hotel, so you don't leave.
You don't leave.
You do everything at the venue.
And there's probably... 40 sessions.
Yes.
Over 3 days.
Yes.
Every time I was spotted in an audience or in a hallway, a line formed full of professional speakers who also thought they decided they needed to critique me as
advice.
Well.
Advice, yes.
Let me tell you how you could suck less, Nick. It was brutal. And I had a lot of people just say, Nick, this is not for you.
Yeah,
you seem like a sweet guy, and you sound like a hillbilly, but you're never gonna make it in this business. And boy, if I ever wanted to hide, it was for those 3 days.
And this was opening keynote.
Yeah, no, this was at the very beginning.
Right.
And then probably one of the most painful things was immediately after my keynote.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be at the book table.
Yeah, I got to go to my book table. People were avoiding me like the plague. It's like I had COVID. Aww. And I remember nobody came to my table except one person. And this gal, this lady, I couldn't even pick her out of a lineup, but she came up to my table and I thought, oh, you'd like a book. That's and so sweet. I grab a book to sign it. And she's like, oh, I didn't want a book. I just wanted to check on you. I mean, because she knew how bad it was.
Yeah.
And then she, out of pity, bought my book. And then I felt bad. And that's like, oh, God, aww, such a loser. And when did you leave? Because you left. Mom and Dad.
Well, I had to leave quickly. I mean, I feel like I had a flight that night. Or maybe early the next morning. It was quick. I was not there very long.
And
your parents left. So you were on your own.
How did you feel leaving?
Oh, I was ready to change my flight, which back then it was a lot harder than it is today, and it cost a lot of money, and that was something.
And we didn't have any money.
We had none, and I feel like I had even been gifted a ticket to get there, but I knew I couldn't. I knew I couldn't, and I was really worried leaving you by yourself, just worried knowing you needed encouraged and somebody to talk to, and we were all leaving, me and your parents were leaving.
Yeah, and I don't drink.
No.
Because that had been a good time to get drunk, but I don't drink. I don't gamble, and boy, I should have started.
Well, it's just a social event, and I thought, who's he going to hang out with, or who's he that's not just going to be advice, in quotations, all evening long, which I knew was just not going well.
Yeah. And I remember, I mean, it's kind of a joke, but it's kind of not. But it's like, I wanted to jump out of my hotel room window. And we were right there on the bay of the ocean at the Marriott, except my hotel room was on the second floor. And I thought, I'm going to have to jump out of this window six times. You know, I'm dragging myself up the stairs. One more jump. Funny. But then I remember maybe the most painful part of that event was at the end, the closing banquet. They had, I want to say, 40 round tables. 40 round, at 8 or 10 people per table. So yes. 360 to 400 seats. That's probably about right. And every speaker had a table.
Oh.
With a table tent with your name great big on it. And it was titled Dinner with the Pros.
Oh.
Because we were the pros. So yes. if you want some FaceTime, get some more advice.
Yes.
This is the opportunity. And I knew this wasn't going to go well, but I thought, well, one more dinner and then we're going to call it. We can go to the airport.
Go home. Know?
And when I get into the room, I mean, the room is packed. And there's one table in the very middle of this ballroom that is completely empty.
Oh.
And it's got my name on it.
Oh, Nick.
And so I sit there. I mean, what do you do at this point?
Right.
I am just hating life. Every table's full. I had one guy come and steal a chair from my table. I'm serious. To go sit somewhere else.
Oh.
And there wasn't extra seats.
Right, there never is.
I think people just decided. I think seven people. One guy stole a chair. I had one chair. I think six people turned around and left. But at the end of it, I just grabbed my table tent and folded it up and shoved it in my pocket, and I just walked out.
Mm.
And I never felt so ashamed and embarrassed. And what was so hard about that was this was my opportunity to break out. This is how I get discovered. And all I got discovered, I got discovered as someone you will never want to hire. And, you know, I think back about, well, what did I do wrong? Because everything was just as I'd rehearsed.
And you did everything the way they asked you to do, perfectly.
Yeah, but, and I can't blame my coaches, because they are very successful, very influential speakers. But in that whole process of trying to be perfect, I lost who I was.
Yes.
And it became a rehearsed
talk.
Talk.
Or yeah. Presentation. What would you call it?
It was phony.
Right.
And an audience can pick up on that.
Oh, yeah.
And I was perfect, but I'd forgotten who I was. And I wanted to quit the business again. Yes. I wanted to quit real bad. But I had already sold a talk to the Sheet Metal Contractors Association with David Finley.
That is right.
And I had to go in and I had to talk to these apprentices because I'd already just, in the process of this, I had developed the four core competencies and given them their assessment. And they said, we want you to teach them. And so I had to go in and I had to teach communication in 2 weeks.
Yes.
And I just thought, it's not going to work. I mean, and I don't know how long it took me to discover what the problem was. And where I messed up on stage.
Yeah, I don't remember all of that.
I think for a while I wanted to blame other people. I mean, when we fail, we want to blame somebody else.
Yes.
But I remember that night at the apprenticeship program when I sat down in front of those sheet metal workers. I did not take my suit.
No.
I did not take my pocket square.
Jeans and boots and...
Yeah, and I thought, who am I? Who am I at my core? And that's who I'm going to be. And I don't care what this audience thinks they want. I don't care what the professionals think I need to do. I'm just going to be me.
Be me. Mm-hmm.
And I did. I walked in my blue jeans and my cowboy boots, and I grabbed a bar stool.
Yes.
And a cup of coffee. And I remember like it was yesterday, walking up, and I sat down on that bar stool, and I kicked one heel up on that bar stool.
Yeah.
And I just had a conversation with those guys.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Because it was me.
It's from the heart.
And I think, boy, if I could go back to San Francisco, and I've been there, and I have a hard time every time I see that hotel. But I think, boy, if I could go back. It wasn't my stories that didn't work. It wasn't my pauses or my... emphasis on what were. It wasn't any of that stuff. It's just that I lost who I was and I forgot to just be me. And I was trying to be somebody I wasn't. And all of that advice those other speakers gave me worked for them.
Yes.
And it worked great for them because that's who they were.
Yes.
But it wasn't who I was. And if I could go back, I'd throw that suit in the trash and I'd walk in with my jeans and my cowboy boots and I'd grab a cup of coffee and a bar stool. And I'd have a conversation with them, and it would work.
Yeah.
It would have been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But also wouldn't have learned that lesson.
Right. You wouldn't be where you are today and who you are today.
God, why do we have to learn the hard way?
Do we learn any other way?
No, I don't. I don't learn any other way. I mean, I don't think I'm the only one that's gotten lost or struggled to find out who they are or who they are supposed to be. I was listening to, you know, Toby Keith passed away a couple weeks ago, and I was watching an interview he did with News 9 anchor Robin Marsh. And She put a couple 6 minutes on news, but if you dig a little deeper, you can find the full interview. It's an hour long interview, and this was taking place just a few weeks before Toby Keith passed away, and he had written a couple number one hits, and he was on tour. He was doing a few things. He said, I was starting to have a little bit of success, and he said, I was following all the rules. I was doing what Nashville told him to do.
Mm-hmm.
I was singing the songs I was supposed to sing. I was dressing the way I was supposed to dress. And he said, I was having some success, but he said, something wasn't right. And he said, one day, he said, and the way he put it, I love it, but he said, I just started dressing out of my own closet.
Hmm.
And he said, I started singing the songs I wanted to sing. And he said, everything changed. He said, he never really saw the success that he was wanting. until he started dressing out of his own closet. And to me, I mean, he's just started being him. He quit listening to the advice of others. And he just said, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to be the best version of myself. And you're either going to love him or you're going to hate him.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. He polarized an audience, right? But I just thought, what a unique story.
Yeah.
What a neat story. And then I heard another story similar. It was Alan Jackson. He's got a documentary. Maybe it's on Netflix or something. But he was just talking about getting started. And the Nashville producers and the executives said, hey, you've got to have an upbeat, fast song. That's what's hot. And so that's what you need to sing. And he wrote some, and they didn't work. And he said he wanted to release this song, and it was a love song. And they're like, absolutely not. You're a decade or two too late for a country love song. Nobody wants that. The market doesn't want that. And he finally, he kind of drew a line in the sand. And he said, I'm going to sing what I want to sing. You know, he refused to take the advice of the experts.
Mm-hmm.
And he released a song that was that's titled, and I've got it on my phone, Here in the Real World,
oh.
Which was his first, I believe it was his first number one hit. But if you think about the lyrics, you know, it's cowboys don't cry and heroes don't die. Good always wins again and again. And love is a sweet dream that always comes true. Oh, if life were like the movies, I'd never be blue. You know, that is just a country love song, and it really it launched his career because he did what he felt he needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he was true to himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess if I could give anybody any advice, it would be, you know, be true to yourself, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
Even if popular opinion says the market doesn't want that, or if popular opinion says that's not good enough,
yeah.
I would encourage you, just be true to yourself. See what happens.
Yeah.
Might be surprised.
So do you have any regrets?
Yeah, I mean, I think we always have regrets, and I think regrets are kind of like, have you ever seen the guys that are on the Discovery Channel that pan for gold, or you know, they're gold diggers, and not gold diggers in the sense of a woman trying to find a gold digger, but these guys are gold miners. That's probably the right term. But, you know, it's the crevices in that wash pan. That's where the gold is collected. And when I think about regrets in our life, I think about creases or places of pain, but I think in those regrets is where the gold is, and I think if we can look at those, that's where there's a life lesson. And when I think about regrets for this San Francisco event, I feel like I let Terry down. I feel like Terry and Mark had a lot of confidence in me, and I let them down at that event, and so I regret that. And I also, you know, these four coaches that invested in me, you know, I let them down, I feel like. And I know my side of the story, of course, on my perspective is I did everything right. But I know if I heard their side of the story, they probably would say that, man, I tried to give that guy good advice and he wouldn't take it. And there's probably some truth to that. But so I'm sure I let them down, and I hate that. And I know that's all part of the process and part of learning, and that's hard. And so I think about that.
But you and Terry have talked about it.
Yeah, we have, but you can still you know, when you think about regrets, it's like, how far do I go back?
Well, that's true.
But
it's a dark road.
But, you know, I just, you know, you hate to let people down. And when I tell, when I've told that story to you, we're always the victim. You know, we're the victim in our own story. But the truth is, there's two sides. And I screwed that up. You know, I take full responsibility. And you know, I don't want anybody to think that, oh, these people at NSA, all they did is beat up Nick for 3 days. Because, you know, that's maybe how it felt. But I'm sure there was a lot of individuals who encouraged me, who maybe their unsolicited advice was designed to help. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lesson there about unsolicited advice. If somebody doesn't ask you for advice, probably we just need to keep it to ourselves. And I fall into that trap. But you know, there were some good things that came out of that event. There was one situation. And I want to say it was the middle of the second day or maybe the beginning of the third day, and everyone was in a session. And I'd gotten to the point where I just quit going to sessions. Everybody was locked in a room, so I could not get some more
advice.
Much needed, I'm sure. But I was at a coffee shop or a Starbucks there in that hotel, and this lady that I did not know, I recognized her because she was a big deal. Mm-hmm. But she walked up to me, and she's about a foot shorter than me, and she just put her hand on my shoulder and kind of rubbed my upper back and just said, you know, how are you doing? You okay? Mm-hmm. And that meant so much.
Yeah.
It just meant the world to me, and she just had so much compassion in her eyes. She really cared, you know, and that was Ruby Newell Legner, and she's a big deal, big speaker, works in the professional sports market, but
that's sweet.
You know, that taught me, boy, the impact that we can have, because boy, she had that on me, and she could have just as easily just walked by, but she didn't. She stopped, and you know, we hear that people will forget what you say, and they'll forget what you do, but you'll never forget how they made you feel. Mm-hmm. And I'll always appreciate her for that. For me, that was a big deal. Yeah. It just gave me some comfort, you know.
So we've talked about the takeaways from this whole event and story, but tell me this, because I don't even know this answer, but why don't you tell this story more? And why, I mean, I haven't heard it in a workshop, keynote, it's not in any of your books as far as I know. I think I've read them all.
Yeah.
But yeah, why not?
Yeah, you're right, I don't. I've never told this story. I've told this story once to a small group of men, and
you told it to a guy on an airplane, didn't you?
Well, yeah. I told it.
I guess that's included.
Well, no. I mean, I've told it to one audience, one small group of men.
Okay.
But I don't know. This one's so personal. That's just
hard
so
for
much,
me to hear still.
So much shame. Just, oh, so bad. But, you know, I did tell that man on the airplane. That was Clint. And didn't know Clint. Clint Swindle.
And Swindle. You usually don't talk to people on an airplane.
I don't talk to anybody on airplanes.
Not even me.
Well, we were leaving Orlando. We had gone down for Mark LeBlanc's introduction into the Hall of Fame.
That's right.
And that's where we got to stand up 75 times in a 45-minute presentation for all those standing ovations, which some of them were phenomenal, and
yes.
Mark's was the best. Mm-hmm. But they definitely stood up for a reason for him.
Got to work out.
But no, I'd gotten upgraded to first class, and I usually give you my upgrades. But
well, I was going somewhere else.
No, you were on the same plane.
We were?
Yeah, you were back with the dirties in the back of the airplane.
Yeah, give me your seat. Oh, well, doesn't matter. That's another conversation.
Well, I think I got upgraded on the way out there, and you took first class on the way out there, and so you let me have it. It was a rare lapse of judgment, and you let me have my first class upgrade on the way home. But I'm sitting next to this guy, Clint. I didn't know Clint from Adam, but we started talking, and he was a speaker, and he was from Texas, and he was at this event, and I don't know how it came up, but that story came up. This story. Mm-hmm. And he said, Nick, you got to tell this story. Mm-hmm. He said, if you don't tell this story, nobody benefits from it. And he said, there's people that need to hear this story.
Yeah.
He said, as painful as it is, there are a ton of people in this world, especially in our industry, that don't know who they are and trying to be somebody they're not. And mm-hmm. they're stuck in the comparison trap. And so that's why I'm telling it today, because it wasn't going to make this list.
Yeah.
But so Clint, you know, that's for you. Don't think that you didn't have an impact on me that couple hours on the flight, because you did. And I appreciate you pushing me to have the courage to share this story. So that's why I still don't know if I'm going to share it on stage. I'd have to figure out what's the takeaway and how does that apply to business or leadership.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually pretty obvious, but it still hurts.
Yeah.
Still painful.
It's a tough one. Yeah, it's raw.
But, you know, I think the story we told last episode about Cruz's cut, I think that formed the determination I have.
Yes.
Like, I'm not afraid of somebody saying no.
No, you're not.
I'm willing to call somebody and ask them for the sale. Or
yes.
I don't care. And if someone says no, I don't care. Or at least I don't let it bother me.
No, you don't let it bother you.
But I think the San Francisco story, bombing on the main stage at NSA, that taught me who I am.
Yes.
Why do we have to get lost and become somebody we're not to figure out who we are? I do not know. But I think both of those stories were instrumental in helping me build the business and the influence.
The influence you have.
I have today.
Yes.
And I'm glad it happened, maybe.
Maybe.
But it was tough.
Yeah.
It was tough.
Yeah.
What else do you remember? Anything else?
No, you really hit all the points. Yeah. Yeah. So where does that lead you? What do you want to share about next week? Or the next time we meet, whatever day that is.
Well, I think we should do some leadership. I mean, we've done some life.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. There's
leadership. Life and leadership, yes.
Right, but this is life and leadership.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a couple tough conversations today.
Yes, you did.
Maybe we need to talk about how to have a tough conversation.
That's good.
Because there's, you know, every leader I've ever ran into has to have tough conversations.
Yes.
And, man, if we can get good at having tough conversations, I think everything else gets easier.
Yes.
So maybe we should talk about that.
You can talk about that. I'll just ask the question.
Well, you don't like to have tough conversations.
Oh, I don't.
Most people don't, and I don't.
You're really good at it, though.
I almost look forward to it. Maybe that's because I'm sick or weird. I don't know.
It's a challenge that you accept.
You know, it is.
I just like to hide.
When I get a tough conversation in my scope or in my vision, I think, how can I frame this conversation up in a way that they thank me for it?
Yeah. And you do a really good job. That'll be fun to talk. It'll be fun to ask questions.
I will do it.
Yes. I mean, if you'll have me back.
I will have you back. As long as you stay a subscriber.
Oh, I am.
You are?
It's on my favorites list.
I'd like to.
And I listen to a lot of podcasts. You know that.
So. And I'm one of your favorites.
Well, very that's good.
Well, you are on my favorites list, too.
Oh, so, thanks.
There we go. All right, guys. That's all we got for you this time. Till next time. Take care.